Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this week we are brought to you by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah. If you have any other questions on that, you can direct them to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
And I'm Easton. And we are your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast. Yeah, that never gets old, or does it? It can't get old. No more than the being in sixth at some point yesterday. I don't know.
Now, that's definitely never going to get old. I mean, it took me personally about 40 episodes to realize what I meant by that comment.
Yeah, not sixth place, sixth gear. But at one point, at one day, you were also in sixth place.
Yeah, somewhere along the way, I had to be.
So, there you have it. Well, Cole, we had a lot of racing this weekend. We had
a ridiculous amount of racing.
It was everywhere. Besides, I didn't race, and I don't think you did any racing, so we're just here to talk about other people's adventures.
Yes, and some surprise adventures.
Okay.
Surprise.
Surprise. Sounds like a surprise to me, too, maybe.
We'll get to that later. We got a riding tip today?
Yeah.
Sweet. We'll look forward to that.
Yep. Riding tip. World Superbike coverage. Someone's back. My favorite person ever in motorcycle racing, number two, favorite person ever, has some pretty big news that I'm excited to announce. He finally did it, and he did it, and he deserved it, all of it. We'll get to that, and then we get to cover some MotoGP. So I say we roll an intro and get into it.
Let's do it.
Yesterday at one point I was in sick.
And we're back.
We're back with a riding tip first. I think we should probably do that first.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was my idea. I don't know. Now you're making me second guess.
No second guesses. Let's do it. I was just joking.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I did have to look long and hard at copyright things because this rider tip was going to involve some sweet music. But unfortunately, it's not going to. But maybe if Cole's real nice, he'll provide his own sample music while we get through this. Are you ready?
Well, what music do I got to do? Like sad, happy?
Oh, you'll find out. Don't worry. It's pretty. It's just smooth music.
All right.
And this week's weekly riding tip is brought to you by Bender Motorsports, which is private coaching to build solid riders through vision-based training. This week, Josh has to say, become a smooth operator. Yeah. Every input should be smooth. Throttle, brake, bar input, and body position. We want our suspension to use all of its capabilities to absorb bumps in the track, not abrupt motions of our riding. Moving into your turning body position should be a smooth process, not plopping off and back onto the seat. Sudden application or release of the brake lever is a great way to upset the bike. As you gain skill and in quick flips, these motions may become faster, but they should still be smooth.
Smooth
operator. How important is smooth?
I would put it up there in the top three, because when you're not smooth, your bike will tell you.
Yeah. Either these days, either by a little blinking light or, other sorts of blinking lights in your eyes as you hit the ground.
Well, I mean, there's been plenty of times mid-corner, maybe you're out of position body-wise, maybe you accidentally grab a little more brake than anticipated, and that's how a lot of crashes happen, right?
Yep. I'd say not always just crashes, though. You know, sometimes it's, you hit a corner. Yeah, you hit a corner and you either have a back tire slip out or you just... for me, it's usually I'm stuck staring at something for too long, and then I finally get my head whipped around and get back online, and then I'm walking out of there shaking my head like, come on, man, you knew better than to do that. But yeah, it's smooth. You know, I heard a saying once. I've heard this saying is very well known, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And then I had a pretty important person say something quite the opposite. He said, slow is not fast. Fast is fast. And we need to be fast. Which was interesting to me. And I'm going to try and apply that, but I don't know that I can. But smooth is important and is the key to fast, which doesn't necessarily mean slow.
Well, I don't have my sidekick here to back me up on the dirt bike stuff today, but...
But?
I did have a long day of dirt biking, this relates.
Okay.
Did have a long day of dirt biking, and as you know, road racers tend to use the rear brake very sparingly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Transferring back to a dirt bike, it's kind of the opposite.
Okay. Makes sense.
You use a back brake a lot. And a front brake much more gingerly. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, these modern dirt bikes, they have really, really good brakes. And you realize how good brakes are when you're on a loose surface rather than asphalt. That being said, it is really easy to remind yourself how important being smooth is so that you're not locking up your front end and going over the handlebars and doing cartwheels. I don't know why I know that, but it happens.
How many, sorry, that just reminds me of the beer and Advil school.
The what?
Oh, you don't remember the beer and Advil school? With Aaron Stevenson, corner spin. Oh, some people like to call it the beer and Advil school because you're going to want a beer and you're going to need an Advil.
I had forgot that one, but
there you go.
I do know one of our early episodes, we talked about if you're camping, you're crashing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I recently picked up a dirt bike because I'm going to go do the dirt bike thing. Mm-hmm. And I have yet, including today, I have yet
to go camping.
that's also true. But I have yet to take that thing out of the back of a truck and not put it down at some point in the day.
There you go. Well, that's how it be, I guess. You know, words stand true. Is that due to your lack of smoothness, though?
Today was.
All right. Well, I think...
Today was. I needed to stop. I needed to stop. And what do you do on the road when you need to stop?
Hit the brakes.
You hit that front brake, man, and you know... 2% or whatever they say, right? You come in slow and then you get harder, right? It's still smooth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But on the dirt, it's real easy to, you need to level up on the smoothness.
Yeah. What type of dirt were you on? Were you talking mud? Were you talking sandy? Were you talking hard packed clay?
We're talking hard dirt with a gravel surface.
Yikes. Okay. Yeah. That's very slippery. Very slippery stuff. That's the biggest thing that gets me about dirt biking. And I don't know, supercross, motocross, whatever, and we're getting a little off topic here, but the amount of different terrain you can cover, the amount of different terrain you can cover on a dirt bike, right? Because you can go to the dunes one weekend, you could be on some hard pack dirt the next weekend, you could technically throw some freaking slicks on there and go hit up the pavement if you really wanted to, supermoto that. You could be on some soft mud, some soft dirt. I assume that supercross is... In my head, it's generally the same kind of terrain. I mean, I know it changes like throughout the night, and that's part of what gets hard about it is, you know, navigating the ruts and all of that. But they try and bring in relatively similar dirt and keep it the relative same moisture content, correct?
Nah, interesting side note. They travel all across the country, mm-hmm. and they usually bring in dirt that's traditional to the area, I would say.
Okay.
You know, of course, they're not trying to haul in a bunch of rocks with that dirt. So you might be on some Georgia clay, you might be on some Seattle needles. I mean, whatever. But
pine needles.
But they do try to drag in. They try to drag in dirt, and I think sometimes, in some cases, I've even heard of them storing the dirt for the next year, so that's the same dirt that comes in.
Dirt. Interesting.
Dirt. As it relates to the tip, I just want to say you kind of went off, said, you know, the old saying, smooth is fast. Or wait.
Slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Yes. Yes. I would change that. I would argue and say smooth is always safe. regardless of the speed. Smooth is your safest bet.
There you go. Smooth is safe. And fast is fast. And slow is last place. Don't do it.
Yep.
It ain't worth it. All right. Well, that is going to wrap up our weekly riding tip. We do thank you, Josh, for bringing that over to us. We love your weekly tips. And I think the audience does too. Let Josh know down in the comments. And while you're down in the comments, take a look in the description. Click the link to Bittinger Motorsports. Go hit him up for some awesome private coaching down at MSRH.
Yes.
I think they made it through this hurricane pretty okay from what I've seen. So we're good to go.
All right. Thank you, Josh. And before we leave the dirt topic.
Oh, still on the dirt. Okay. We should get like themed on the bottom of the dirt.
So
road.
You're going to like this though. Trust me. You're like, get off the dirt, Cole. But no, I challenge everybody to go out and follow our good friend, Jeff Whitmer.
Okay. Yep. BMW dealership.
Yes. And you're going to add this link to the bottom.
Okay.
You're just going to add his link because I lost it. Motorrad Moto Pilot. Motorrad_Moto_Pilot. Because our good friend Jeff participated in an event this weekend in Costa Mesa, California, that unfortunately I was out there and I had to miss it, but I don't want to miss that again. Are you ready?
Ready.
Costa Mesa Speedway has a dirt track, flat track
for motorcycles. Okay.
And it's in like a little arena. It actually looks like a pretty decent facility out there. I haven't got a chance to go check it out yet, but I will be just as soon as I can. Okay. But coincidentally, Jeff went to one of their, maybe four times a year, they have what they call a Harley night.
Interesting. Okay.
And if you look on YouTube and do a search for that, you can find all kinds of funny videos. Mm-hmm. But they have people on Harleys, just like the word says, people on Harleys showing up. And flat tracking, but these are people off the street. You have ape hangered baggers. You have stock sportsters. You have any Harley you see driving down the road, dressed out, decked out, Harley Davidsons out there going around a flat track. Our good friend Jeff had the opportunity to go race a BMW R18 on Harley night on the flat track. If you want to check that out, it was pretty awesome. Jeff, I got kind of a problem with the helmet choice. If you guys want to see what that helmet choice was, you'll have to go check it out for yourselves. But take a look at that. That's kind of crazy. If you're in the California area, check the calendar. Not a lot of flat tracking that goes on anymore. So when you come across something like that, go check it out, support it, and keep that going. I look forward to my chance to see it in person.
Yeah, that's awesome. And once again, that's Motorrad, MOTORRAD_Moto_Pilot. And that's an @ in front of that because that is his Instagram handle, if you will.
Yes, sir.
Good old Jeff Whitmer. Well, that's pretty cool. I'll have to check that out myself. I want to know how the old R18 held up against the American classics, if you will.
The American classic, if you will. And I think that should bring us right into Moto America.
There we go. Ooh, this is my favorite one to talk about this weekend.
Okay. Well, we're going to start with the baggers since that's where we're at.
Real quick, before we start with the baggers, I did see a funny picture today, and it was a Ducati, and it was definitely a V4R. And I don't know. I didn't look into it much because I'm pretty positive it was a joke. But someone was like, yeah, congrats on winning King the Baggers. And then they photoshopped two large Ducati bags on the back of a V4R. And I was laughing because I was like, you know, technically, if Ducati sells bags for the bike, could you?
I think the rule still says American bikes at this point, but I'm not sure.
Well, that's fair for Moto America, maybe. But as baggers, you know, get bigger and bigger all over the world, who knows? I just wonder how much weight you have to put in that bag to make it meet the minimum weight requirement. Anyway,
So
King of the Baggers.
King of the Baggers. Let's talk about the history of King of the Baggers for a minute.
Got it.
So the Baggers come in. Harley Davidson jumps in there, of course. Indian jumps in there, of course. Still the two brands, but we have factory rides and we have privateer rides. Well, I won't call them privateer rides, but we have non-factory bikes sponsored by big name companies.
Yeah.
On both sides, on the Indian side, on the Harley side. Well, last year, Hayden Gillum ended up winning the Bagger Championship,
running
the number one plate on there. But you know who didn't win? Kyle Wyman on the factory Harley last year.
Correct.
Yeah.
He won the inaugural year, but it was only three races, if I recall. Mm-hmm. And then they went to six races. I mean, the league keeps growing every year. And they're out there battling. But we let Herfoss from Australia. And no ill will towards that guy by any means or our Australian listeners. But this is the American King of the Baggers.
When Moto America. It's a Moto America, America, American, American bikes, American racing, American tracks.
Yeah, and we have let Indian win all the championships.
Indian is American, Cole.
I understand, but we've let Indian win, and now we put an Australian on an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
This can't sit well. Come on, Harley Davidson. What are you guys doing over there?
It is interesting. I'm sitting here looking at the points. It's not by a whole lot. We got a 11 point lead.
It was only 2 points before the last race.
That makes sense. Poor old Kyle Wyman. But yeah, S&S Indian Motorcycle, huh? Interesting. Yeah. So is S&S the Indian's quote-unquote factory ride then?
I think so. Yeah, because he's on one of the factory Indians.
Yeah.
But.
Well, congrats to Troy Herfoss. Maybe there's just something about the Australian outback that just makes you better at riding a bagger. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, not to cheat and cut ahead, but tell that to Jack right now. Moving on.
It's not a bagger. It's a different type of bike.
Oh, what the heck?
Anyway.
So that was the bagger. So like you said, congratulations, Troy. Hell of a year. It was really one of them seasons where it didn't seem like anybody wanted to win that class. They've been kind of back and forth the whole time, and they've been letting third parties win the last however many races. They're just kind of going back and forth in this points battle, but that's how she ended up, and we'll see where they go next year, huh?
Yeah, I like the baggers, man. I can't even. I wish I could talk crap on them, but I think it's sweet. It's so goofy, but it's cool. We've talked about it plenty of times before, but the baggers are just sweet. If you haven't, like, if you're still listening to this podcast and you haven't checked out the baggers yet, go watch some highlights on YouTube. They're way better in person. I'd say most of Moto America, I think, is better in person.
Agree.
To a degree. Mostly because of the experience you get for the price of the tickets and just all of that, right? But they're still pretty cool to watch, and I do like the Indian and Harley rivalry. I still do question, though, why we're not inviting some other factories in just to really put them down. But I guess we'll see what happens next year.
Yeah, we will see. So since it was championship week, they were in New Jersey, so champions were crowned all over the place. So just to kind of skim on there, in the stock 1000 class, we had what a race.
Where is it? There it is. Yeah.
Hayden Gillum kind of had it. He had control of the class, but he still needed to be out there racing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yuri, I don't know how to say his name. second place guy on race one.
Uribe? Jason. His first name's Jason. Let's just call him Jason.
On a BMW.
Mm-hmm.
What a race. Go back and check that one out if you haven't seen it. They were in mixed conditions all weekend, as is traditional at New Jersey. It's raining and it's not raining, and then it's really raining and then it's not raining. And we had similar situation this year. The rain stayed away for some of the classes, which was great, but they were dealing with rain, especially during qualifying. And
yeah, I know from what I was watching all weekend, that qualifying definitely kind of mixed some things up, which I love when the rain comes in and mixes up the qualifying, because it does make the race the next day that much more interesting.
Yeah, but I'd rather no rain for the race. But what a save. So Hayden Gillum was leading that race, the entire race. He had a huge lead. Mm-hmm. And Jason, on a BMW, the orange cat, he chased him down. It was exciting watching as the laps clicked off. He just kept eating like three tenths, over and over and over again. Finally caught up to him. And now what is he going to be able to do with him now that he's caught him? And mm-hmm. Hayden came out of the last corner and got out on the candy cane stripe. Water started spraying. The race was dry, but when he hit that candy cane stripe, water shot in the air. His bike shot. Oh man, it did the shutter step sideways. I have no idea how he saved that, but he did. But he lost to the top spot in gathering up the bike. Jason leads down to the last lap.
Yep.
And Hayden Gillum comes by, passed him in the same spot he had almost high-sided himself to the moon in. He must have just closed his eyes and pinned it.
That or he just got all the water out the time before.
But what a finish. You got the time? The difference was like...
Sorry, I'm looking at the championship results. Let me look at the... We're talking race two, just to make sure?
Race one.
Whoa, it's practice. Sorry. Time difference. Yeah. 0.026.
Yeah. She was a photo finish.
Yeah.
Was awesome. So Hayden Gillum wrapped up the championship. Congratulations to him on a Honda. Looked good all year. He crashed himself a few times during the year is the only reason it was really a competition at the end. Mm-hmm. But that's why we race the races.
Yeah, well, and that, you know, the biggest thing I think I'd talk about with Hayden Gillum on the Honda this year is, are we going to see more Hondas next year?
I'm sure of it.
And are we only going to see them in stock 1000? Or are we also going to see some more boys?
They're already racing the stock superbike class, you know, filling up that superbike grid.
Yeah. I just wonder how many more Hondas will hit the grid next year and what that'll... I don't know. I mean, I think Hayden's kind of out there proving it's a pretty competitive bike. Obviously, he's good, too, not to take anything away from him, but...
Yeah, I think Ashton Yates did wonderful on a Honda this year.
Yep. So I'd like to see it. You know, I'd like to see it. I think you'd like to see it, as we'll get to with MotoGP. It's always better when you have different brands, different manufacturers, not just all taken up. Which, speaking of, this year in Moto America, unlike most years, with the big boys, the superbikes, Yamaha did not lead the way.
No, but before we get there, we got to talk about super sport.
Okay.
I'm not going back to dirt. Calm down. We'll talk about super sport. Matthew Schultz.
Yeah.
Finished up that championship.
Pretty well. 29 points ahead. Sorry, I was looking for everyone's favorite. Kayla Yakov is down in seventh for the championship. Right above Stefano Mesa. Anyway,
So I'll point out that Matthew is on R6, the oldest bike on the grid, the oldest platform. Brought Yamaha the championship back, which is pretty cool. It's been, I can't remember how many years, but it's been a while. It's been a while since they had that class.
Probably since the V2 came out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
That Ducati V2, for whatever reason, is just killer in that class. It's sweet. So,
I mean, you pointed out that 150 cc's wasn't that big last week during this, but what about 300? Because that's what they have.
It is interesting.
They're
tuned down. So is the Gixxer 750, but it's just so strange to see that the R6 is still there. But shout out to Matthew Schultz. Which one is it?
Well, I always say Schultz, and somebody in my home yells at me every time I do. So it's one of those.
Schultz. Got it. But yeah, shout out to him for bringing that back on an R6, which is sweet. The other, you know, that just brings up again, though, since it's the end of the season, we're looking forward to next season, and I'm wondering how much longer will we see R6s out there?
My understanding is Maddie's already signed up with the team to race the R6 again next year. So at least one more.
Hopefully we had enough engines to make it through a couple more seasons.
So then we talk about Moto America Superbikes. Because what happened there? What an interesting race. We come into the weekend with Josh Herron, pretty much a shoe-in to win the championship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're trying to sell this. Cam Beaubier still got a, you know, shot at it or whatever, but we all know
it
doesn't have to happen. So Heron's asked before the race, what are you going to do? What do you have to do? Heron says, I'm going to take it easy. I'm going to be conservative. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to finish this race, get the championship, call it good. What does he do?
He did
that for a bit. He came out. He comes out in this race, and he's sitting down in like sixth place, and he's just turning laps, and he's kind of in some traffic, and he's for a while there, he was like at the back of a, you know, the third, fourth, fifth, and then him sitting in sixth. He's just sitting back there, and I guess not trying, just riding around, and for some reason, the guys in front of him wouldn't get out of his way. And as the race progressed, it seemed like it started to click in his mind that I don't know that he was thinking, hey, I have a chance to win this, but he was thinking, I don't like sitting here in this pile of bikes. I'd rather be somewhere.
Yeah. Why sit in traffic that you could get taken out of on accident?
Right. So then, you know, the red mist.
The red mist.
Because he cleared a few bikes. He started following Loris Baz, who I know it's super important for him, for Loris to get a win. Hasn't got one yet this year. 3 podiums, I think, leading up to this race. And he just sat behind him, but Bobby Fong wouldn't let it go. Bobby Fong caught up on the tail of him. Bobby Fong was, you know, trying to push the issue, trying to get up there, trying to lead that race. And Herron said, I can't sit here anymore. Sorry, Baz, I'm gone. And he took the lead.
And held it?
No, he took the lead. He started to make a run for it. It looked like he was just going to be comfortable up there. Bobby got him back. And then you thought, well, now he's just going to sit there. Bobby deserves a win. Bobby went and got it. Let's just be conservative. But no. The red mist was in full swing at that point. And he decided, you know what? I'm going to do some crazy passing on the end of this. I'm going to drive like Herron drives, and he won that sucker.
And the championship with it. And I think Josh Herron doesn't see the red mist. He is the red mist.
There you go. Josh Heron, the Red Mist.
The Red Mist. Josh Heron, if you listen to this podcast, I give you full right to put that on the back of your leathers next year. The Red Mist. I would love to see it. You know what? Huge shout out to Josh. We've talked about Josh a lot on this podcast. It's been a while, I think, but I love Josh Heron. Every interaction I've had with him personally has been great. Watching him race is great. He's definitely one of those guys that I think brings good attitude. Brings the right attitude to the racetrack.
Brings the competition. Excitement.
Yeah, excitement, competition.
Personality. He's
out there to ride, and it sounds like this weekend he didn't shy away from any of that. So, congratulations to you, Josh, for winning your championship on the big bikes. I'm assuming you're coming back next year with a vengeance.
He broke the record for the longest time between championships. 11 years.
Wow. Well, there you go. Got a record with it. Stole the number one plate from the Yamaha that's been sitting on, but it has been sitting on for years because I believe before.
Yeah, it was Bobier, and then it went to Gagne.
Yeah, I was going to say Bobier was back in a Yamaha back in the day when he was still winning. So it's been on that blue bike for a long time. I think it is about time it made its way over to Ducati. Unfortunately, I hate Ducati, so, you know, what can I say?
Well,
but I'm starting to wonder, you know, where do my alliances lie, really? Because you got Josh Heron, and then obviously my other main guy is also becoming more and more red as we speak. So what are you going to do?
And then just to follow that up, I mean, we're talking about Heron's personality, mm-hmm. but you see, there's some videos going around where, so race two. Championship's all done up, so I thought for sure he was going to bend it or win it.
Yeah, you would think.
He didn't. He seemed to take it pretty conservative. But Laura's Baz with that win in race two.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up making it out of the year without being winless. He gets on the top step of the podium. Congratulations to him. I haven't heard what he's doing next year, but I'm hoping they bring him back as well.
It definitely seemed like a good team.
Oh, absolutely. Out there,
him and Josh, both on the Ducatis.
You see, so after the race, when on the cool down lap, they'll probably get fined for it. But Heron was flipping Laura's Baz off. Instead of shaking his hand, he just flipped him off. And it appears that Laura's Baz returned the favor, but the pictures, you can't really see Laura's hand, but I'm pretty sure it was mutually back and forth. And then mm-hmm. Heron rode on the pillion seat that's not there to win
yeah.
and was standing up on the back of the bike.
I did see that picture. Yeah.
Did see that right picture. There, though. That's the personality, man. That's what gets the fans engaged.
Yeah, that's what we like. I mean, like, it's one thing to be all professional, but I think we touched on it last week with Lugnut, is that you gotta have some fun. You gotta break the rules. You gotta bring the drama, you know? It's gotta be fun and engaging, and it's the freaking end of the season. You just won a championship. You know, Loris Baz just won his first race, race two. So, yeah, absolutely, go freaking... That's how it should be.
Yeah, and you can do that and still be friends. I mean, Heron and Bobby Fong locked horns more than once this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're caught on camera a few times exchanging pleasantries in the paddock.
Yeah.
And Bobby Fong was on that podium on that first race. He was one of the first to go give him a bro hug and congratulate him.
Yeah. It is possible to be upset with your fellow racers, but actually still be friends. Yeah. That's normal, you know? It's the red man. I
stopped short of friends, but the camaraderie was there.
There you go. Well, anyway, I think that wraps up Moto America. Once again, huge congratulations to our favorite, at least my favorite, Josh Heron. Good fight, Cam Bobier, this year. Hopefully next year, it's another exciting season. I think this season was pretty good. I think near the end there, like you said, it was kind of
the Heron show.
Josh was going to take it. But
so in other Moto America news, quick, mm-hmm. they did just sign I believe a 5-year deal. Might only been 3, but I believe it was a 5-year deal with FIM for the Daytona 200 to continue that partnership. So
good. Okay,
we can expect to see the Daytona 200 K keep going. In the press release that they did, they said they've seen the attendance numbers of both the riders and the fans, and the vendors have increased year over year since they partnered back up. So they're going to keep that going.
Sweet. Yeah, 200 is sweet. I mean, it's a bike week. Daytona Bike Week is perfect. Just one long week of all bikes. That track is so cool. It's cool. I think it's awesome to start the season out with a non-official race of like endurance at Daytona, an iconic track. Like, I think it's sweet. It's cool.
Yeah, agreed.
So, good. Well, from Moto America, should we head across the pond to not Spain, but Spain?
Yes.
Okay.
World Super Bike. We've got the return of Top Rack at a track he has never won at.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
One of the few.
But he is back from injury. He had to come back because there are, I was just looking at the calendar and then I clicked on this round, which was useless. There are only, before this weekend, there were only three. Now there are only two rounds left and he does have a lead, but it wasn't quite big enough to just say, see you guys later. I'll see you next year. So he came back from injury, which I believe ribs and punctured lung?
Question mark. He had a collapsed lung.
Collapsed lung. That was it.
So Top Rack comes back. All eyes are on Top Rack.
Of course.
But out of the shadow, not the red mist, but the foggy mist of nobody's paying attention, came the one, the only, the Texan, the American, Garrett Gerloff, on his number 31 BMW. What a weekend for that guy. What a weekend for that guy. He was in the top five in all three races.
There you go.
He was on the podium in race one. He had a great qualifying weekend. He was, I mean, even the practices leading up, there were one or two that he led.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of a practice as the fastest bike.
He is sitting also in the top 10 for the world standing. Just pretty good.
He's doing amazing. And that was an amazing weekend for him. It was fun watching him, and it was fun watching him because Iannone on the Ducati, non-factory. Iannone wins race one.
Yep.
Iannone, that race felt like he was holding everybody up.
Okay.
But nobody could quite pass him.
Mm-hmm.
The side effect of that was an amazing race with a bunch of bikes balled up. A lot of passes for positions for the top 10 was just insane for the entirety of that race.
Okay.
In the middle of that, Top Rack works his way up to second. Garrett Gerloff comes up and says, you know what? I'll take that. And there was a couple laps there where we had Garrett Gerloff and Top Rack going back and forth. Very exciting.
Heck
very
yeah.
Fun to watch. Especially
on the same bike. So.
Especially considering the history between those two.
Yeah.
And their friends. I think Top Rack is one of those riders that gets along with everybody. But they do have some history, and they were very friendly. I mean, they are friendly. Again, Top Rack's friendly with everybody, but it was just interesting seeing. It was nice to see Garrett Gerloff taking the chances, knowing that Top Rack was out there fighting for a championship, which he is not, but still willing to get up there and dice it up. Safe, clean racing.
Right.
Very entertaining. Congratulations, Garrett Gerloff. You had a hell of a weekend.
Yeah, no, that's all. It is cool to see not just one, but two little American flags up here because he did also take that third place back in the French round. So we got two American flags on the on the board, which is good. I like seeing it. It's great.
It's awesome. So race one ends up Iannone, Top Rack, Garrett Gerloff. The notable thing about that race is our friend Buliga, the Ducati, gave up the ghost on the warm-up lap, I believe it was. Maybe it was lap one.
Okay.
It was early. And so he was out. He was distraught. all his championship chances were down the tube.
Mm-hmm.
Batista has started to turn this thing around. He's had a piss poor year. He's coming off injury going into the year. He's just kind of dawdled around. He just hasn't been the Batista anybody's used to seeing the last few years.
Right.
But the last few race weekends for them, he's been coming up, starting to look like his old self. And it all culminated with a win in the Super Pole race and a win in race two. He's too far out of the points to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, he's under 100 off, but I agree. Some pretty nuts stuff would have to happen.
Something really bad would have to happen. So he's out. Buliga is still the one with the chance. But
he did produce, like I said, I saw a highlight, you know, the last lap of World Superbike race. I think it had to be race two. It could have been Super Pole race, but I think it had to be race two. And it sounded like it was also some pretty good freaking racing throughout the whole weekend for World Superbike. So
yes, very good. So like you said, two more rounds, Toprak's holding that lead. We'll see what happens.
Yep. He came back, took a second, which ain't bad. We got two more rounds in Estoril and then Spain actual. All these flags confuse me. Where is Aragon? Someone please down in the comments, tell me where it actually is, because I'm pretty sure it's in Spain, but it's not. Is it its own country? I don't know. Sorry, not well versed. Anyway, that is World Superbike.
Geography.
Yeah, we are not a geography show or a zoo show or a weather show, or tend to be more and more of a dirt bike show as the weeks go on. So
I like it.
But hey, all right, that wraps up World Superbike. We'll be back out, and I closed the calendar out, but I think they're 2 weeks out from the next one. So we will not be back for that next week, but it is time now for MotoGP.
And the good news is there was no fantasy this week. So moving into the race, what happened? Did we have a bad connection?
No, I think there definitely was fantasy this week. Why do you keep saying that? What's going on, Cole?
Because, man, I was gonna use my last boost, and then I decided not to, which I guess ended up being a good thing. But
probably a good week to not do that. It's so I was actually going through the, you know, I always look at last GP points, and the guy up at the top, Triple Three Racing, still holding down first place. He had quite a few points. Probably a pretty solid team up there. Obviously, I mean, you're sitting first, but the person that won this week's most points for the week didn't actually surprise me where they were on the list because of how interesting the week was. I know I suffered pretty bad. It sounds like maybe you didn't suffer as bad, maybe.
You're
just glad you didn't waste a boost on it. But anyway, your points winner for the week, holding down 14th place currently, but winning a whopping 147.5 points in this week's GP, is Moto Assini from Italy. So hit us up on Instagram at JK Moto Podcast. Send me a direct message. We'll get you over your weekly winning prize. That's pretty cool. Just for your top three, Triple Three Racing still holding down first, Team Thor in second, and Duke in third. Which, Thor, you might want to watch out. Duke got 140, and you only got 129, so. Yeah. And you say that you suffered, Cole, at 121 points. I got 89.5, so I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it at all.
That's because you was bragging last week.
Yeah. Anyway, before we get into MotoGP, that is the fantasy. Once again, Moto Assini from Italy. Hit us up on Instagram. I didn't watch Moto2, but Joe Roberts, our local American, got to shout him out. Took home a sixth place. Ain't bad, I believe.
2-6 in a row.
So still holding out pretty solid. Which is leaving him in fifth at the moment in the championship. But they've got a pretty tight championship over there. Because third and fourth are both at 156. Joe's at 153, and Garcia is at 166. Iagura is at 208, so pretty, you got a pretty good lead. But second, third, fourth, and fifth are all pretty close. Only 13 points between them. It's not bad.
Come on, Joe. Let's just win this thing out and see what happens.
Yeah. Just put wins on the board and
no big deal.
Let everyone wreck behind you.
Yeah. No big deal. Knock it out.
Anyway, it is still great seeing him out there. I think he's got a ride in MotoGP here coming up soon. Obviously not next year. The grid is finalized.
He's running out of years, my friend.
Yeah, but I got to hold out hope. Anyway, MotoGP, what a freaking weekend. We were in Indonesia, which was hot.
And crap conditions like normal.
Yeah. But we had a very... I don't even know how to put it. The commentators always say it best. Something happens and they're like, does anyone even want to win this championship? And I sit there and laugh and I'm like, no, you're 100% right. Because it really just seems like between the two of them, Bagnaia and Martin, if you will.
Taking turns.
They just they can't decide who's gonna hold it down. But shout out to Jorge. This is the spoiler part of the show, by the way, if you haven't watched the race yet. Sorry. Here we go. Didn't hold it down on Saturday, even though he broke a record earlier that morning in qualifying, was on pole, and literally at the end of the first lap, dumped the bike. But props to him. Got back on that bike super freaking fast and pushed and ended up pulling out of 10th place, which...
Didn't give him any points.
No. He's, one place off? I think ninth is the...
Ninth.
For the sprint, ninth is the bottom there. But I was proud of him. You know, personally, I like when a rider puts a bike down and doesn't just walk away and say, well, you know, whatever. You know, they get back on and fight for it. I do think, you know, maybe you kind of realize how much MotoGP has changed. And they talk about that a lot, but like how hard it is to pass. I feel like 10, 15, maybe even 20 at this point years ago, he could have came back and been in the top five a lot easier than today.
I would agree with that.
So it's just kind of crazy, but it's still impressive to come back. You know, 19 people finished that race and he came all the way back up to 10th place. So good job, Jorge Martin. But, you know, are you trying to win a championship?
Was that not the sprint race? Speaking of riders putting bikes down.
That was the sprint, in fact.
That's where Bezzecchi put a bike down.
Yes. Man, I don't remember now. I watched it. I don't think he put it down.
Oh, he put it down because the viewing party I was having was laughing hysterically about the Malaysian crew staff. Instead of helping him pick his bike up, they were all video camering. They were standing there filming the bike wreck.
Yeah. Yeah, because he had quite the weekend. Almost ran into Bagnaia, if I remember right.
Yep.
And then put a bike down. But he was running up at the top, which was nice to see. Haven't seen that in a minute. I did feel like there was a little bit of, you know, all year we've kind of been talking about, or not we per se, but Mark Marquez is the only guy fighting at the top on the GP24 or 23, rather. It was nice to see Bezzecchi up there this weekend. Morbidelli also came to play. Acosta kind of had his wits back under him. So Saturday was interesting, right? Because Jorge wrecks out. So you have Pecco taking a first, and A. Bastianini taking a second, and Mark Marquez in third, right? And everyone, because Mark is Mark, everyone's like, oh, he could still win the championship. They want to talk about that. I don't think anyone ever actually believed it yet. Mathematically, like you said earlier in the show, you know, numbers are numbers, and technically he could win, yes. But it has been getting interesting the past few weekends, because Bastianini and Mark have both been kind of playing, and the other two are dropping the ball from time to time, wrecking out. So it's questionable. Like, do they actually have a chance? And I would have thrown that on Bastianini way before Mark, personally, for a multitude of reasons. But also, you know, it'd be kind of funny to throw it back in Ducati's face and be like, well, I'm taking the championship before I leave you. Thanks.
Yeah.
But so that's Saturday, right? Jorge's down. Bagnaia comes in, sweeps up some points, but also Bastianini and Marquez come in and sweep up some points. And so it's really starting to, like, it kind of turned my head around, and I was like, well, hang on a second. Okay. I still won't put it to Marquez because I don't think he's quite got it, but Bastianini might just be there for the fight if these two are going to keep crashing out. And then bring in Sunday. What a day.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. Yeah, we're not even going to Golden Underwear, but sticking on the Bastianini theme.
Mm-hmm.
He had the bike to make that one of the most exciting races of the year.
100%.
And then he pulled it off a trick that he learned from Martin the day before.
I think it's actually a trick that he learned exactly from Bagnaia the week before. Because it was pretty much exactly the same. Come in freaking hot, start setting lap time, like fastest lap of the race, 3 times, and then bin it. And that's exactly what Bagnaia did last weekend when he binned it.
But will Bastianini blame the Michelin the same way Bagnaia did? I'm trying really hard to be a Bagnaia fan. You guys kind of bag on him, and I'm always saying, you know, the guy's got the skills to pay the bills. He's out there doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just another warrior out there on the grid doing his thing. Stop hating on the poor guy. But if I look at his whole body of work, we'll go all the way back to the alcoholic driving with nothing but a hand slap. That's not the first time he's blamed a tire.
No.
And he might not be. That might be true. That might be absolutely 100% true. But do you want me to believe that somebody at Michelin is giving you a bunk tire intentionally? I mean, he stopped short of saying that, but when I watch it, I'm like, everybody crashes.
Yeah.
I don't hear Jorge Martin out there saying, or Martin saying, oh, it was fine, but my tire was no good. Or
yeah.
It just seems like the common theme is there's always something. It's always something that doesn't seem to be between the ears.
Yeah, it does often feel like that. I don't know. I call him the robot for a reason. It feels like when he's under pressure, kind of. Sometimes when he's under pressure, he's perfect. And that's when, like, you actually see the robot come to work. And then other times he's under pressure and he does some, like, amazing stuff and then wrecks. And it's weird because the guy, it feels like he only ever wrecks completely on his own. Like, he'll wreck out of first place when he's not fighting with anyone.
Well, I would argue
every time.
Well, those are just the ones you're remembering, because it was him trading paint with Alex Marquez. It was him trading paint with Maverick Vinales.
That's true. And Mark Marquez at the beginning of the season. Yeah, okay. All right, you got me a little bit there. But there are a lot of times, like, I'd say the big moments in the season when you're like, where he just kind of dumps it. And it's weird. And obviously, Jorge Martin apparently is doing the same thing. Maybe that's, you know, it is just like the commentators say, a testament to how on the edge these guys are truly riding. And maybe that's it was this season, wasn't it? That at the very beginning of the season, he said the bike was too good.
Yep.
It was too good. He couldn't ride it at the limit because it was too good. You didn't know where the limit was.
Yeah, he did say that, but that might have been last year, actually.
I want to say it was this year, but you could be right. Fact check me. Let me know down in the comments if that was 2023 or 2024. But anyway, Sunday, we come back. Like I said, glad to see Pedro Acosta up there. He was putting down some good times after Bastianini. You know, there's Bastianini, there's also Marquez. We can't not talk about Mark Marquez. I don't know if he would have been in it. He was kind of losing it anyway. Then he comes out of some corner, hits a gear shift, and you hear the bike go, and that I saw him pull off, and I'm like, oh, don't tell me he wrecked. And then I look down, and there's orange in the bottom of the bike, and it's smoking. I was like, oh, geez. And I looked over at the wife, and I was like, that sucks. And then Bastianini wrecks a couple laps later. I was like, both of those guys, that sucks. Because both of those guys were arguably, like, kind of in it. And like I said, we got a few rounds left. The top two guys don't want to freaking finish a race every weekend. So with that happening, if you can just sit back and collect the thirds and seconds and every once in a while take a first, you got a chance. But I think it kind of Sunday that's 0 points for both of them. I think it kind of just in so my head threw them.
What about the 4 second comment?
Which 4 second comment?
After the race, Bagnaia said something to the effect of the way he knew Jorge Martin was going to crash and the way he was taking the corners, he was going to lose 4 seconds or whatever. And when Jorge Martin did his interview, he just said, how about I beat him by at least 4 seconds tomorrow?
Yeah, that's right. They did. They mentioned that during the race, I think.
Yeah, he ended up with five, I think.
5.595, indeed. Which, you know, big thing for Jorge, too, because I think he's crashed out here every year is what they were saying.
Yeah, he's had some bad luck there.
So the sprint didn't make it look good, but he turned around. He got it. The standings currently, since we've been talking about it, but we haven't actually mentioned the points yet. Come on. We got Jorge Martin at 366. Bagnaia 21 points behind him at 345. Nenea Bastianini down at 291 and Marc Márquez at 288. So, which the only thing that confuses me about that is both those guys wrecked out. And on Saturday, going into the weekend, it was a 2 point gap. That's from the sprint. All good. I was super confused during the race. I was watching a little like where it stands now. I was like, he just wrecked out. How does he? Yeah. All right.
Yeah, made up 12 on him on Saturday.
On the sprint.
So we got a touch on Honda.
Yeah, they had some big news. Not news, but.
Which news are you talking about?
They got a top 10 finish today.
Huh. Yeah, see? Joan Zarco.
Yeah. The only guy that seems like he can maybe ride the bike. So they had another new aero spoiler thing on the back of that thing.
Yeah, that bike is huge looking.
Yeah. Yeah, he finished in ninth. Also, Quartararo. I know we talked about Yamaha last week. Quartararo's continuing. It looks like they are kind of...
Yeah, everybody's jumping on that wagon. And I'm not saying the wagon's wrong because it does look like his results are getting better and better and better. And he had a bad start in that race. Was still able to keep it up. But... Mm-hmm. Did you see anything about Jack after the incident?
No.
I haven't either at this point. I'm sure by the time...
I know when they replayed it, they didn't ever have a good camera angle. I don't know if there's better out there now. But I know they said his name, but I couldn't get eyes on it.
Yeah, he slid out, took out Asparagus, and
Marini.
Alex Márquez, Luca Marini.
Yeah.
It was a big pile of bikes. Unfortunate going into first corner, second corner.
Yep. And then, you know, a few laps later, Joan Mir is looking and he's like, well, I don't know. I can't leave my buddy in the dirt.
That's become the joke. That's become the joke at my viewing parties is how many laps he goes. You know, he's going out. It's just how many laps he makes it.
How far he can make. It's sad. What the saddest part that I have said before, and I'll continue to say, is that is a world champion, a MotoGP world champion. He has won a championship, and
vibrant world champion. Which I have to point something out. You'll have to go find the video of this. If I find it, I'll send it to you because we can't put it on here anyway. Thank you, MotoGP.
Yeah, good old Dorna.
Have you seen Alex Rins walk?
No.
You know, he had a really bad leg break, and it was super serious.
Yeah.
And that's the bulk of what they say about it. Homeboy's leg doesn't work correctly anymore. It is really odd to watch him walk. I don't know if that's something that will be with him forever or if he's still correcting, but, man. Whatever
you happened. Have to send me the video. A quick Google search. I'm not finding anything. But, yeah, I mean, I do remember the pictures from last year. His whole freaking legs up, you know, hanging on the thing in the giant cast. Broke a whole bunch of... I'm not a doctor, so I don't know the names of all the bones, but broke some stuff.
Well, still not good.
Okay, can't walk. But he can ride a motorcycle, kind of.
Kind of.
I mean, he... finished in last place, but 12th because of how many people wrecked out. That's rough. Anyway, we got to get wrapping this up, but yeah, MotoGP, what a freaking wild weekend, a wild season. It's staying exciting. It's kind of bumming me out because it doesn't feel like it's exciting for the right reasons. But I think we've got one more quick round. We'll be in Japan next weekend. And so we'll be covering that next week. And after that, we got a 2-week break before we head down to Australia. So my prediction is that next round might be just as freaking nuts. I don't know. Japan kind of brings out some different people, I feel like. You know, every track, there's some stronger people. I think Japan will be a good mix-up. But I really think that the 2-week break from there to Australia, people are going to kind of get their wits about them. Because after that, we got a triple header and then a 2-week break in the final race of the season. So it's kind of like, in my head, Australia starts the final, you know, last quarter of the sprint to home base or whatever you want to call it. Right. So my prediction would be that next week could be just as crazy and nuts and who knows. And I'm not going to put any hold on anything. I would save your boost. If you still got a boost hanging out for your fantasy, I would save it until Australia or something like that.
I'm going to save it, but you know, I think that boost is going to peter out before I make it off the bottom.
Yeah, probably. No offense.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, we got another week of MotoGP next week to look forward to. So come back and join us for it. And yeah, it's been a hell of a season. It'll continue to be. Anyway, to close out, we appreciate you guys for listening and watching, being here with us. And we will see you all next week.
Yep. See you next week. Thanks for listening.